You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 291st edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 946th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of May 18th, 2023. I'm your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Pride banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
All right, this week's banner moment wasn't too difficult to come up with. It occurred last Friday evening when Mackenzie Mabako committed to play his collegiate basketball at Indiana. Mabako, a top 10 ranked player, a five-star prospect, had decommitted from Duke earlier this spring and had narrowed his decision down to either Kansas or Indiana. Well, it was Indiana who won out last Friday. This commitment, it helped shore up the Hoosiers roster by bringing in a long and athletic scorer who can play the three or the four in a traditional lineup. Indiana has not had the good fortune of winning recent recruiting battles with top-end talent. So the fact that Mabako chose the Hoosiers is yet another sign that the program under Mike Woodson is headed in the right direction. Now, with all the excitement this commitment brings, the young man is a freshman and will need to hit the weight room and go to work this summer to understand how to adjust his game to the collegiate level, and there are no guarantees of success. However, one cannot be anything but excited to see Mackenzie play in Assembly Hall next year. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host this week. Jared and Andy are off this week, but here with me to my left, he is a senior writer for The Big Lead, the world's most underpaid shot doctor, and the treasurer of the Tony Gwynn Fan Club.
Analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Let me quickly add just one thing about this.
The dude just interrupted his own jingle.
Ryan, what's on your mind this week?
Still sort of afterglowing from the Mbako commitment. I think we had a show after the commitment on Friday, and it was well attended, so we thank everybody for coming. But you know, it still is a little, I wouldn't say surreal, but it's odd that Indiana keeps winning these short recruitments and you know, 3 years in a row bringing in a top level player from a short recruitment and who top level player decommitted from another program and decided to try his time at Indiana. And it's just weird. I think that Indiana, the message here is that whatever Indiana does in that short recruitments, they need to extend to the entire recruitment of players, and the intensity I think needs to ramp up in some of these longer recruitments. Now they've started to do a little bit better with some of the guys in 24 and 25 classes, but this is just a taste of what they can do if they put their energies in the right place. So really a great get for Indiana, fills a huge need. I feel like all you're missing now is really a knockdown shooter on the perimeter, and you got one spot left. Maybe you find one. Maybe you just hope that somebody gets much better next year. But it's a huge get. Anytime you get a five-star, a top 10 player, it's a moment for a program. I mean, I know that Kentucky and Duke get those guys all the time, but Indiana doesn't. And so it is a big deal. And one of the bigger recruits Indiana's gotten in the last 20 years. It's a big, big moment.
It's going to be interesting. I'd like to get you guys' take on what that means for the roster here, maybe as we go to the headlines. But now let me introduce someone that we all know and love. So joining us this week, a special guest. He is one of the godfathers of IU sports podcasting and the head of sports media department at IU. And a man who desperately wanted the Pacers to get the number one pick in the NBA draft, mostly see how long it would take Scott to be able to pronounce or me to pronounce Wembanyama? Galen, what's on your
You're
mind
close.
This week about
You're
Indiana
close.
Sports?
Close. I every time I hear that intro, I live in perpetual fear that at some point I'm going to cease being one of the godfathers of IU podcasting and become one of the grandfathers of IU podcasting. Much worse spot to be in. No, I'm excited in general. Obviously the recruitment news last week and really this whole cycle, I feel like it's being undersold a lot by IU fans and media, in as much as I think everybody's just too shocked to quite know how to put it into words, as we just heard Ryan struggling to put things into words is a sure sign that we're in uncharted territory with anything.
I feel weird, guys. I'm a little scared.
We're going to work through this together, my friend, I promise. But I'll tell you what else I'm excited about, guys. Trace Jackson Davis doing a tremendous amount of work at the Combine right now. His measurables are off the charts. IU doing a great, Cliff Marshall's been going nuts on social media, singing TJD's praises, and rightfully so. Now, who knows if that will actually translate into a higher draft position, but, if you look at, him and Jalen Hood-Schifino, they're going to be, they've been regularly featured throughout the Combine stuff. We've got Jalen Hood-Schifino out there dropping wheeze when it comes to IU basketball and talking up the program any chance he gets. You got people looking at the progress that those guys made and where they're at right now in the draft process and highlighting that as reasons why people are coming to Indiana or want to come to Indiana. This is a good spot to be in. I mean, it really is. One of our mutual friends was talking the other day and they said something along the lines of it's irregular, but the times when it feels like all the momentum has suddenly shifted in your favor. It kind of felt this way like around the Cody Zeller recruitment. It kind of felt this way a couple other times. I know when Jared Jeffries committed, there was that brief moment where it's like, wow, things are really looking up. These are the moments to savor in the offseason as IU fans. And I don't think we have to qualify it by saying, well, we'll see what happens in the regular season. Let's just go ahead and enjoy the W's while they're coming in.
You know, Galen, that's a great point. I have not felt this good about Indiana basketball for a long time. Something about Friday just really, really clicked that, we want to recruit over Kansas. It's a top-level guy. It completes, adds to the roster. It really helps in maybe not taking a step backwards after you have some talented people leave the program. It was nothing but good news so far in this whole portal season and recruiting season. So I agree. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, putting that into context, just how good he is. I mean, he's probably the third best recruit Indiana's gotten in 20 years since Jared Jeffries, probably. I mean,
you've
got Romeo
Langford,
you've got Eric Gordon, and probably Mbako. I mean, Cody Zeller was thought of very highly, but he wasn't top. No. I didn't think he was that high. Noah Vonleh was hyped. He was a top 10 guy. But I think if Noah stays two years, he's probably a guy Indiana fans remember. I forget he went to IU sometimes because it was such a bad year. And then who else? Thomas Bryant, Jalen Hood-Schifino are the only other guys you can think of. And James Blackman Jr., I guess, was in there. But the top guys are Romeo, Eric Gordon, and Mbako. And, you put that kid in that category, that is a huge, huge deal and a huge get for Indiana. And again, credit to the staff and to Mike Woodson for closing it. You had to close it against one of the best closers in college basketball, and you straight beat out Kansas for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
When you combine Renew and Hood-Schifino and also keeping Trace, that level of talent has to be in Woodson's recruiting notch in his belt as well. And then you go out and get Ware, who is a top, and Galen's right. There's all kinds of things that these guys need to do and they need to play well and all of that. But celebrate the fact that we got them right now and the potential is there that – the staff draws out the ceiling is much higher than it was, at the end of the season. So here's what we have in store for you this week. We're going to talk a little bit more probably about Mbako and some other Hoosier headlines in segment two. It's Galen's segment. He has a new podcast and he knows a lot. He knows a lot about a lot, but he really knows a lot about NIL, and we're going to pepper him with questions about how NIL works and some of those things. It'll be a great segment two, and then segment three, as usual, we'll answer your questions. All of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. But now let's talk about our presenting sponsor. Home Field Apparel, wear on for the team. This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos, like two different versions of the Bison, and so many more. The bottom line is that Home Field has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. What could be better than that? I'm obviously in love now with the long sleeve t-shirts from a variety of school. Dang, Connor keeps adding stuff that I have to buy secretively from Mrs. Tonsoni. But anyway, secretly or not, go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, music. There we go.
We have like just music beds over under everything that we say for the rest of the show. That'd be awesome.
Exactly. You talked about Jalen Hood-Schifino and what a great ambassador for IU basketball, an IU basketball ambassador, speaking well for the program. Latest quote to Andy Katz, Schifino says, quote, "I think we'll be really great. Added some good pieces, some big pieces. Coach Woodson and the rest of the staff are doing a great job of recruiting guys and getting guys. The program is just going upwards," end of quote. It's just great to have a one and done that is still here in some ways helping the program. And Jalen Hood-Schifino came in, took care of business, and he's helping the program even while he's pursuing his dream. I think that's just fantastic. Also mentioned earlier that both Jalen and Trace are at the NBA combine. Jalen measured 6'4 and a quarter with the wingspan of 6'10 and a quarter. Trace measured at 6'8 and a quarter with the wingspan of 7'1. Most projections have Jalen somewhere between the end of the lottery 14th and the early 20s. Trace projected for the mid 20s to the early second round. You saw videos of Trace hitting some threes. He had different segments there where he's hitting 50% or more from threes. He's going to need to do that to really boost. But he's looking good at the combine. We wish both of those guys nothing but luck here in getting ready for the draft. And then Dylan Harper, a recruit that we're pursuing. Rob Cassidy from Rivals has some a good article out talking about where he stands, and we're getting some traction here. The Mbako recruitment has resonated with others. That's another reason why that was important. You start getting other guys in the AAU circuit seeing that kind of player going to IU. And as Ryan said, we don't get too many. We need to start getting many.
Change that and
get a lot of these guys coming in to get back to where Indiana was. I think Coach Woodson's on that way. And then the Caleb Love situation. He's back in the transfer portal after Michigan wouldn't accept credits from North Carolina. I guess some of the advisors down there's writing wasn't up to par. And so they wouldn't take –
they don't take fake classes in Michigan.
I guess they actually had to be classes. But Michigan, for the second year in a row, has had to turn away a transfer due to their academic standards, which opens up a discussion if we wanted to go there. The question that has been on social media, guys, is should Indiana pursue? We'll discuss that in depth at the start of segment three. We have a really good question, but those are some headlines. Ryan, where would you like to go? What would you like to talk about of those Indiana headlines?
Well, I think if we're going to talk about the recruitment a little bit more of Mbako and how that affects people, and you're right, five-star C guys go places, and it's a copycat thing. He did well there. Jalen Hood-Schifino did great. He's going to go in the first round. You know, they know how to handle guys like me. It creates a snowball effect, really. and I know a lot of people don't get caught up in recruiting rankings and don't get caught up in, you know, whether a guy's going to be an NBA player or not. But I'll tell you this, and I mentioned this the other day on the emergency show. You watch UConn make that run in the tournament, and every time a game got close, which was rarely, they dominated everybody. But some of the times the games got closer, Jordan Hawkins would step up and hit an impossible shot because he's an NBA guy. And I remember against San Diego State in that championship game, I think State got it to 6 or 5, sort of late, you know, halfway through or, you know, with about 8 minutes left, something like that. And it looked like, hey, San Diego State's clamping down on defense. Finally, they're starting to make some shots. But Hawkins got the ball in the wing, was guarded. There wasn't any, and he just whipped around and shot a three in a guy's face and made it because he's a pro. And you need those guys to have success. I know everybody loves the guys who are a four-year great college player, Aaron Kraft or whoever, you know, Jordan Hulls. We love those guys. But they aren't the ones who make the plays in the big moments to win you a national championship. You need guys who are professionals. These days, that's the way it is, because everybody has so much talent. It's so spread out. And that's the way you win championships. And you get those guys to come and then maybe stay an extra year. Maybe you don't, but you have the opportunity while they're there. So that's why these are such a big deal. It's not only you get a great player that's going to be really fun to watch that could have a moment like Jalen Huchefino against Purdue or whatever. It's that these guys can help you win a championship and take you to the next level and take the program to the next level. That's why it's such a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to get them in, and you got to get them in the gym and go to work. There's a lot of things you have to do, even with talented guys. But, man, getting Ware was in that same position a year ago, and Mbako, and then you got a veteran point guard. Things are really, really looking up. But what headlines grab your attention, Galen?
Well, I'll kind of mine similar ground from what Ryan's talking about here. I'll take it a slightly different direction, though. I think that certainly one of the problems I think IU basketball's had over the course of a long period of time, and this goes through the Archie Miller era, through the Tom Crean era, you know, really all the way back to the Knight era, is IU has rarely been in the conversation for the best athletes playing college basketball at any given time. And I'm not saying that they're there yet. It's not like they're not running out Baylor's starting lineup or something like that. But they are getting some top-level athletes, some top-level guys in terms of potential and skill. And that, to me, is really exciting, both for what Ryan said, but also because of what this coaching staff and support staff have already shown that they can do with basketball players that are talented but perhaps flawed. You know, and you look at the improvements that they made, not with everybody, but with players that were willing to accept the coaching and were malleable enough to be able to figure out that they needed to change aspects of their game. You look at the shooting numbers. Everybody was convinced that IU basketball was like permanently cursed with not being able to shoot the basketball. And everybody's like, well, gosh, Archie Miller was recruiting all these guys that shot great in high school, and now they're not shooting well here. And what's the problem? The problem was Archie Miller and his staff. They couldn't get what they needed out of these players at this level. And to watch Mike Woodson and his staff do as well as they've done with the sorts of pieces they've had. And I think, you know, again, I talked about this at the end of the regular season. I think 5 years from now, we're going to look back at these first 2 years of Woodson, not say, gosh, they underachieved. We're going to say, how did he pull those seasons out of those rosters of players? Like, how actually did that happen? That was a really big accomplishment. And I think what he's been able to do and what this coaching staff and support staff have been able to do, it is resonating amongst a large number of people, not just in terms of what they're doing on the basketball floor, but what's going on off the court as well. I mean, there was a comment, I forget who it was, whether it was there's a recruit out in New Jersey that maybe we could talk about later. There's a couple of other people, but there's been these mentions about Woodson being a real guy. Like, he's going to push you on the court, but you know, they'll take care of you. And it's not like the coaches are lying to you and just trying to get you in the door, as you'll often hear about with other programs. So there's a culture being built here that just seems diametrically opposite of what we had in Indiana basketball for quite a while in terms of guys wanting to come here, guys trying to bring other people in at a high level. And that, I think, is probably, to me, the biggest headline of this last month and a half. As much as the narrative has been out there that Woodson is lazy on the recruiting trail, that he's not putting in the effort that other people are, to watch him pulling these short-term recruits in who are a much higher caliber than Indiana's really ever regularly had a chance at accessing, I think, A, showcases that this particular approach is really working well for this particular era of basketball with the transfer portal and with this late movement. But it also indicates that there's some special sauce brewing in Bloomington right now, and we're not the only ones that know about it. It seems like that message has been carried far and wide.
You know, that's an interesting thing to consider, is at this time with the transfer portal and Woodson's NBA background, where you got guys moving in and moving out. And I've always said that I thought his best aspect was his honesty back in that coaching room that we don't get to see. It's not publicized, but in telling players what they need to do. It obviously worked with Trace Jackson Davis coming back and putting in the work to where he's at right now. And I've always thought that's Woodson's strength, is he's a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you what's going on and I'm going to coach you. And you hear his former players in the NBA say that as well. And I think, you know, in the short recruitments, guys want to come and get developed and get coached and move on. And Woodson's offense and his game plan is that NBA style, and he needs those dudes. He needs those kind of players, and he's recruiting to his style, which I think is something we probably need to discuss as well going forward. Anything else on your minds here in segment one, fellas, that you think we need to cover?
Let's go get the next five star. I like getting five stars.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, though, right? I was just thinking, I feel like our entire perspective of how Indiana needs to recruit has to change based upon what we've seen happen the last two offseason cycles now. I mean, IU, all these questions going into this offseason, what are they going to do? No Trace Jackson Davis. And
roster was empty,
Roster was empty, and they're going to have to start all over again. And they've reloaded in a way that we, you know, normally see teams like Kentucky or UConn, or, you know, teams that are accessing these top level talents, you know, are reloading. This is going to be a hard one for a lot of IU fans and a lot of IU media to get their heads wrapped around, because it is going to be so incredibly different. And I think it's going to take a little time for this particular roster to gel, whether or not they add another piece, but the potential is there to do something
talent-wise.
And I think you've got to put some faith and trust in the coaching staff right now that they know what they need to do with this particular group coming in, and they've got enough raw materials to work with now. You know, so it's like, we can go get the next five-star, but I'm almost like, let's get the next disenfranchised five-star that's been at a program somewhere else for a year. Because clearly we've got something going here where it's like, we can either take a slightly distressed asset and make it better on the basketball floor, or we can take an asset that's really prized and is getting shoved out, kind of like Mbakpo did at Duke, where it's like, you know, if Filipowski doesn't decide to come back, he's probably still there. He's looking around, he's like, where would I go? Indiana's the place that he decides to go. So that's going to be really fascinating to watch, like, the entire perspective on recruiting change a little bit here.
Yeah, what I'll say about this that's interesting is, you're right about changing perspective, and we're in a new world, but everybody's dealing with that change, you know, across, whether it's college football, whether it's college basketball, and the transfer portal has changed things. In the past, transfers would be guys who were at lower level schools who did really well and looked to trade up, or high level guys who did not perform at all and traded down. Like, it was never Hunter Dickinson going from Michigan to Kansas. Like, you know, I mean, you never left those top level schools once you got there. And so it's a completely different world. And it is true. There's secondary recruiting, essentially. Guys you recruit one year, you might be re-recruiting the next year as a transfer. So building those relationships is very important, and maintaining them is very important. And I think even more so, building relationships with great programs is important, because what they're doing with Montverde is trying to make that a pipeline to Indiana. That may not work. But some of those Montverde guys might go elsewhere,
right,
and then wind up back at IU. So you definitely need to do that. That's where modern recruiting is different. You're absolutely right. And it's a huge change we all are all getting used to.
It was quite fun at the baseball game trying to do the emergency podcast, and everyone was coming by, thumbs up. I mean, just the whole vibe it was good feeling again. And we've had that for a couple years. And hopefully it's a lot better feelings going forward with this type of recruitment. But stick with us here on Assembly Call Radio. We're going to talk NIL. How does Indiana stack up? What do most fans not fully grasp about how it works? How will it evolve moving forward? We're going to ask the guru next. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here. 230-some people on a Thursday night in the month of May for in Indiana. Get the race fans going here. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Well, anybody in the mob going to the race, I'll be there. You won't find me because there's 350,000 people there, but I'll be there. So,
yeah, I need to get back. I have not been in years. I would like to get back.
It's fun. It really is.
I've never been. I lived there for 9 years and never went. It was always a weird time for me. Like, I would either come home to San Diego after school was over and be here for a little bit and then come back. It never worked out time-wise. I would love to go. I think the first year I was there, though, was that massive tornado that went through Martinsville where they can't – did they cancel the race or they stopped the race?
They
paused it for a little bit, I think.
No, I think – well, I'm trying to remember what year that was. I think that was the year that they did have to – I think they had to red flag it at the end, and it was official. And there was a tornado went south of the speedway. It didn't actually get to the speedway.
Right.
It was a pretty wild one. Yes. There were a couple years. I think that might have been the Billy or the Buddy Rice year.
Maybe. Yeah.
2004, maybe.
That's exactly when it was. My first year was 2003, 2004 my first year. And I remember we were like hearing sirens and everything. It went right through Martinsville and we heard the rumors of that. So I want to get your perspective, Galen. What do you think about the Caleb Love thing?
Well, okay.
I mean, you think if it's you're in that position, do you take him?
Oh, I mean, I think it depends. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about this in depth on the show itself later, but my feeling on it is there's a good argument for taking him. There's a good argument for not.
I'm exactly
So I'm kind of indifferent. I think the entire perspective changes now versus what it would have been, a month ago when everything was happening. I'm a little bit, I think the timing of this has been odd because, look, I am very familiar with how, like, course articulations work and how transfer credits work, and it's not inconceivable that they would have had a trouble. But the fact that it took this long for them to figure out that he wasn't going to be able to get into Michigan, that I'm a little bit skeptical of.
Who would you, as in your position working at the school, at the university, who is your instinct to blame for that? Which side, North Carolina or Michigan?
Oh, I don't know if there's a blame per se, because a lot of it depends on what classes did he take.
Right.
And the problem is
just for not getting it done fast enough.
Well, the problem is this, like the way that it works is a player or a student announces they're going to transfer. So once they commit to that, then they have to submit basically a series of articulation requests where they take the classes that they have and it's the job of the university that they're transferring to try to match it up with things that are at that university. And the problem is that depending on what he was majoring in and what he planned on majoring in at Michigan, it may have been a situation where You know, North Carolina was offering things at the wrong level. Like, you know, we'll have people try to transfer in here. They take what would be the equivalent of first year classes at another school and they're 100 level, but here they're 200 level. And so they don't match and they can't fit. So I would say what probably happened was they tried to create, or they tried to put him into a major. It didn't work. Then they tried a bunch of different itinerations and then those
worked it around. Work. Yeah.
But again, it feels like, as long as it normally doesn't take that long to figure that out. And normally you figure that out before the guy commits, which is why I'm not totally sure it's academics. Like there's a small part of me that wonders if it's actually an NIL deal issue.
Oh,
because I mean, you pair that with the Hunter Dickinson podcast from Barstool last week, where he's talking about how he wasn't even making six figures in NIL at Michigan. And that's why he left essentially. And I can't imagine Caleb Love was like, you know, I'm going to go to Michigan and I'm going to make sub six figures in NIL. You know, so I don't know if that's the case. Certainly the word is out there that, oh, it was academics. I'm just a little bit skeptical of that. And maybe I shouldn't be.
And maybe that's just a cover story from both sides. I mean, it could be.
Yes.
That, you know, and but when they say academics, they make it seem like the kid was failing classes, you know, I mean, that, yeah. So and that's not true. No, I know that's not true, but I mean, that's the immediate reaction from people. So if it's not the case that it's not academics, it's kind of garbage that Michigan put that out there to make it seem like it was an academic problem to some degree.
Well,
so,
they're always going to try to indemnify themselves from
exactly,
you know, and you know, their fans, which is really who that message is aimed at, are going to be like, oh, well, gosh, he just couldn't match up to the standard or whatever. He probably
it's the Notre Dame. Whenever Notre Dame doesn't get a commit, it's he couldn't hack it.
Well, it's more like he could have he got into school, but he couldn't. He would have probably had two or three more years.
Yeah.
Attached to his time,
basically hitting a reset button on most of his college.
But that's where I think it's weird, because he could have just taken one semester's worth of classes, blown off classes second semester, and he could have gone back to North Carolina at any time and finished his degree if he really wanted to. Like that's the one part of the story that I'm a little bit skeptical about.
Yeah, so he could have just taken elective type stuff to take classes.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a mess, whatever it is, because he was committed for what, like a month? I mean, it wasn't like this was last week.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think, it feels like time has gone by incredibly slowly. The announcement that Love was going to attend Michigan, I think was like, I think it was like 3 weeks ago or something like that. I'm trying to find the exact date. I'm not finding it.
because everything now, if you search it, everything now is about him leaving.
He committed. Right, I know.
April 7th. It's been a month and a half.
God, it's been 5.5 weeks. That's that to me is a little bit fishy, because it does not take that long. I know this. I do this for a living, partially. It does not take that long to match courses, do articulations, and figure out whether somebody is getting their credits to transfer. It just doesn't take that long.
Do you think there's maybe a chance that it was a class he was taking this semester didn't go well?
I don't think that. I mean, it's possible. But again, I mean, not knowing who North Carolina's graduation was, that was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. And you could have replaced that with a summer school class, most likely.
Yeah, it's true. Interesting. The whole thing is fascinating. It really is. Cause it's not like a random player, you know, like he's a big name guy.
He was their big fish basically in this transfer portal. So,
and the narrative coming out of North Carolina wasn't positive. None of us know for sure what went on at North Carolina last year, but he leaves and a couple other players stay. Then he goes to Michigan. Now he's out of Michigan. That's, you know, there's probably some questions out there that have to be answered wherever he goes. All right, Galen, we're just going to, you know, I'm going to throw a couple things to you. And Ryan, if you have some questions that pop up, go ahead and just do what you do best, interrupt and throw the question in there. But really interested in that. We'll start. I'll throw it to you, Galen, so you can introduce your podcast and talk about the podcast, if you would.
Great.
And then we'll go wherever we need to go.
Sounds
all
good.
All right, here we go.
Hi, this is AJ Moye. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jarrett, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers!
Thanks, AJ. Appreciate it. But welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and special guest Galen Clavio. And we're really going to dive into NIL right now. Name, image, likeness, and how it has affected college athletics. And Galen has a new podcast, and he's been diving into it and sharing information. And tonight we're going to learn a whole lot about NIL overall and how it affects Indiana. So with that, Galen, if you would, share with us your new podcast here on the Back Home Network.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Coach. So thought about this a couple months ago. It took a little bit of time to get it off the ground, but we launched a podcast called the NIL Hotline. I am co-hosting it with my sister, Olivia Clavio, who is an IP attorney, has been in this space for over a decade, and really understands intellectual property and rights of publicity and all the things that get wrapped up in name, image, and likeness. So we just launched the podcast about 3 weeks ago. Right now, we try to keep it short, which I know if you've listened to Crimson Cast, that is probably inconceivable. But I don't think we've had a single episode over 20 minutes yet. So these are meant to be bite-sized kind of deep dives into short areas or going over what the headlines are. And really the idea is to try to help people understand what's going on across college athletics right now with NIL. This is such a messy space. There's so many misconceptions among fans. There's so much misconceptions even within the industry about what's going on and how it's being navigated and also where it's going. And you've also got kind of this, you know, above it, you've got this NCAA dance with death that they're doing right now, where they don't seem to be able to get it, you know, their heads wrapped around the fact that the business model's changed significantly. And, you know, it's like they're going to go down with the amateurism ship. So it's meant to touch on all that. We're going to start getting some guests from across the country. There's some great writers and great media folks that are heavily covering the NIL space. And we quote them quite a bit on the show as we try to talk about some of these issues. So you can search it. It's on iTunes. It's on Spotify. We'll get it on some other services soon. But we try to do about 2-3 episodes a week, and we'll probably do more because there's a lot of news coming out.
So to get us started on our NIL discussion tonight, what are some things that you think basic fans need to know on how NIL runs? And along with that, maybe some misconceptions that we have, especially as us older guys who were come up in college athletics when it was under the table and not above the table. So where do we start?
Well, I think we'll start right where you just started things, which is this whole idea of money in college athletics. And anybody who was around college athletics followed major college athletics. And that's really what we're talking about here. I mean, this is where almost always somebody's like, I'm sorry, but I follow a Division II school and it's not like that. It's like, we know. Thank you for telling us that. This is not really about that. It is about the upper echelon of college athletics. And it is ultimately one of those situations where there's always been money, and the money's generally been under the table, and there have been NCAA rules, I'll put that in air quotes, about compensation for athletes. And what I think is important for people to understand is, first and foremost, these are rights of publicity, being able to capitalize on your name, your image, your likeness, that every other college student has and has had forever. College athletes were specifically exempted, or not exempted, they were specifically forbidden from this as part of their scholarship deals. But what's occurred over the course of the last decade, as people have started poking around the amateurism model and saying, no, wait, why are the rules different for athletes than they are for even other people on scholarships that are at colleges and universities? Why is that equitable? Why is that fair? What we landed on with NIL was essentially a 2-year process where the NCAA tried to get the federal government to come in and pass a law that said, nope, sorry, you can't ever be paid. You're amateurs. And of course, we know Congress was like, no, we're not doing that.
Nobody wanted that.
And then the Supreme Court essentially paved the way for summer 2021, which was only 2 years ago, for college athletes to be able to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. The original guidelines that the NCAA put down, or, you know, the suggestions that they had, like, here's how we want this to run, is everything had to be external from the university. So you couldn't use, if I'm Trace Jackson Davis and I'm doing an NIL deal, I'm not allowed to use IU marks and logos. I can't wear a uniform. I can't mention Indiana. You know, so if I'm doing a deal with a local bank or something like that, I'm representing Trace Jackson Davis. That's it. And, you know, I'm allowed to do those sorts of deals where I'm working with a company on a quid pro quo basis. I can do my own camps. I can do autograph sessions somewhere where I'm signing autographs for people. But the idea was always essentially the athlete has to be separate from the university. The university can't broker the deals. And I think to some degree, the NCAA kind of drank their own Kool-Aid a little bit with this idea that athletes didn't have any intrinsic market value. This was an argument we heard for a long time. It's like, no, the athletes actually don't have market value. It's just the schools. They won't actually make money doing any of this. Well, guess what? They started making money doing it.
A lot of money.
It's interesting because a lot of money category came when colleges and universities looked around and said, you know what? The NCAA gave us these guidelines, but there's really nothing to stop us from just paying athletes to come play sports at our school. There's nothing to prevent us from just giving large amounts of money to all of the scholarship athletes or targeting specific athletes. And so that's essentially what's gone on. And some schools have been more brazen about it. You know, Miami obviously got a lot of notoriety for the way that they handled things, Texas A&M. What it's led to is essentially a system that exists right now, where you've got athletes that have market value that are shopping themselves around as far as NIL deals because they're trying to find a combination of good environment to play the sport that they want to play and financial opportunities that come along with that. It is a very gray area, and the NCAA right now is in a very difficult position where they don't, you know, they've said this is not pay for play. You're not allowed to communicate NIL deals ahead of time. We actually talked about this on the NIL hotline today, but they have no way of really policing it.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to see state legislatures essentially protecting their own schools in their states from ever, like, from the NCAA punishing them for violating whatever the NCAA decides is not right with their NIL money. So that's essentially where we're at right now. I think the big misconceptions are people still think that there's, you know, there's that athletes have restrictions on what they can make in terms of the types of deals. There's certain things that are set asides, which we can talk about later. Like, you can't partner with a casino if you're an athlete, although you could partner with one as an athletic department up to like a couple of months ago. And you're generally not going to be allowed to partner with businesses that are in direct contrast to the official partners of your athletic department, although even that's starting to change. So the message I would have right now is, as long as you understand the basics that I just laid out, the details are going to keep changing because we keep seeing the boundaries pushed because this is a brand new marketplace and nobody's entirely sure what the market values are or how this is going to work long term.
So my question is, obviously, And it's interesting, being a guy who went to USC and is plugged into that athletic department, USC didn't have a collective for a long time. The reason why was they thought the NCAA was going to crack down on collectives and the sort of partnership between collectives and athletic departments. They were certain that the NCAA was going to be like, no, you can be set up with an agent to go out and get your outside deals, but you can't just package money and hand it to a player. The NCAA has not done that. Do you see a horizon at any time where maybe the NCAA cracks down on collectives?
I mean, I think the NCAA is trying to act as scary as they can about collectives. And the reality is, the moment they take a collective to court, the collective is going to take them all the way up to the Supreme Court. And at that point, the NCAA will lose.
Yeah.
And that will crack the entire amateurism model apart for good. So the NCAA, one of the things I always try to remind people specifically about Indiana is that the NCAA's enforcement arm for a long time operated off of a premise of fear and embarrassment. Yeah. And the idea was, we are going to shame you publicly and you are going to prostrate yourself before the NCAA and accept the punishment that we give you. And essentially that's what Indiana did in the Kelvin Sampson case. Like, everybody's like, oh, the NCAA put all these sanctions on Indiana. No, they didn't. Indiana did it to itself. And we started to see, whether it was UConn or North Carolina or some of these other schools,
Miami,
they started saying, They started saying, no, you know what? We're not going to do that, NCAA. Go ahead and take us to court. And the NCAA really doesn't have the ability to do so because they're not a legal entity. They can't compel testimony. They can't subpoena people. And ultimately, I always hear about like illegal recruiting. There is no such thing. There's no such thing as illegal recruiting. I could walk down, you know, to the Nike EYBL camp and hand a guy $10 million to come to play in Indiana. It would be a violation of NCAA rules, but it would not be illegal. And so I think it's important to understand that because the threats over the collectives and the threats over the way that those things are arranged, yeah, that's not what the NCAA said it wanted. But guess what? It's what the schools and ultimately the states, in many cases with these public schools, they control those schools. The boards of trustees are controlled by the state governments. They've decided this is fine, and the NCAA really doesn't have much that they can go off of to make it stop. And that's where I think you're going to continue to see boundaries pushed. But I also think with these collectives, you know, USC is in a great spot, obviously, because they have alumni that are plugged in that care. But I think they, and we've read about this with Penn State's collectives and with some other collectives at schools where there's a big budget and a big operating process, there's a return on investment that's expected. And everybody's still trying to figure out what the actual marketplace is. And so a lot of the early numbers we heard, like $7, $8, $9 million NIL deals, those actually didn't come to fruition. Like Bryce Young, I think, probably made the most of anybody last year in college sports. He made about $4 million.
Yeah.
So sorry, go ahead.
Well, it was, and the big one was everyone said USC got Jordan Addison from Pitt for, and there, you know, people were on the Pitt side were saying that he got a $3 million from USC's collective. USC didn't have a collective.
Right.
What they were doing at that point was connecting, you know, they're in Los Angeles, so they were connecting players to brands in Los Angeles. And I think the big one was Caleb Williams got Beats by Dre, and that was like a huge deal for him. And they're getting a lot of money, but it's not a collective deal. Now USC has several collectives. They've just said, forget it. We're throwing caution to the wind. And you're right. I do think it is the collective thing is interesting. Because I wonder if at some point the member institutions that aren't as strong with collectives and would rather have it be a sponsorship type thing where like you could just sign with Nike or you could attempt to change change things. And some coaches would prefer that, by the way.
Well,
they prefer to land good players who could then get advertising deals as opposed to having to compete not with a school or a program, but with a collective.
I think a lot of it is also, I mean, the collectives are an odd but necessary kind of intermediate element because if, you know, the athletic departments are not supposed to be brokering deals. And a lot of this actually is kind of sad because, you know, schools and athletic departments aren't allowed to provide legal advice to their athletes about what they're signing. They're not allowed to provide business or tax advice. The athletes are expected to do that on their own. And it ends up being something where because the NCAA refuses to acknowledge that there is market value for the athletes and that they should be at least in part considered employees, if not fully considered employees, they're treating this like they want that they have nothing to do with it. They have no obligations. They have no educational obligations. And what it ends up doing is it kind of privileges people that come from stronger family backgrounds who have a support structure in place where they can give their son or daughter the legal advice, the business advice that they need. And it's ironic because on the one hand, you hear representatives from the NCAA sounding the alarm bell about agents might, you know, corrupt, you know, athletes or they might rip them off. And it's like, you're the ones that aren't letting the schools provide the support structure to keep that from happening. Now, the collectives, I think, help to some degree because they can work with athletes on those things because they aren't the athletic department. I do think the big question mark is going to be, like, I don't think you'll ever see under the current model athletic departments directly brokering the deals. But if that model changes, which it could within like 2 years, if athletes are ever actually declared employees partially or fully, now suddenly the floodgates are open. And then it becomes a question of, if I'm an athletic department, how many resources can I devote to that? And you're starting to see it. I mean, we were talking on the NIL hotline today about, University of Miami has an associate AD job for brand development. And it is, in the description, it's like you're managing all the NIL deals for Miami Athletics, and you're responsible for sourcing new ones, and you're responsible for kind of managing those relationships. And that's the business that a lot of college athletic departments are going to be getting into, whether they are directly doing it or whether they're working with the collectives who are operating on their behalf.
So, Galen, for an old guy here, I know what a collective is. Quick, how does it work, and who are the people who create these collectives, and then how do they get with – do they work through the athletic department, through the coaching staffs ahead of time, after, to get these young men and women deals? Enlighten this guy who's not sure how all of that works.
Let's put it this way. There's not really one consistent answer across the board. It is a little bit different everywhere. I mean, nominally – I would say the platonic ideal of a collective is one that is headed by, either people who are within the donor base or within the corporate base that supports the athletic department and has historically, whether it's through donations or whether it's through sponsorship buys or whatnot. And so what happens is that group gets together and they look for partnerships with other people who are interested in providing some kind of money or other services that could be put into NIL deals. Then there is generally some kind of a go-between that takes place between the athletic department or the individual programs and the collective, so that there's an understanding kind of going both ways of like, well, here's what's needed, or here's what people are asking for, and here's what's available, or here's what we need to go look for. And the reason I'm saying that it varies depending on the situation is we're seeing, I mean, first of all, it's only been going on for 2 years. And a lot of these collectives have really only been around for a year because, as Ryan pointed out, everybody thought collectives were potentially a bad thing would be punished by the NCAA. And that's not exactly how it's gone. And so you started to see these collectives pop up within the confines of a bunch of different athletic departments. Many of them are essentially kind of holding tanks for financial resources that are then distributed out to athletes. And there's a system. Sometimes it's under the table in terms of like, we're not having official communication. Sometimes it is very much above board, but it's like, we need to have some kind of a clearinghouse where both sides understand where money's going. The other wrinkle here is the nonprofit collectives versus for-profits, probably the wrong way of looking at it. But, you know, you've got, for instance, in the IU system, you know, two of the collectives that are prominent in this process are Hoosiers Connect and Hoosiers for Good. Hoosiers for Good is the charitable works one, where it's like, well, you know, this allows you to make donations that are tax deductible. It allows you to have athletes participate in certain activities that, you know, they're probably not making as much money as they would through a traditional for-profit type of collective, but it allows people that would not otherwise be giving money to give money and be able to take something off their taxes for that. So like Colin Hartman is associated with the, you know, those two IU collectives, and they generally work in tandem because they'll get an inquiry from somebody that's interested in the business of NIL, and they'll try to figure out what they're looking for. You know, are they looking for a straight up sponsorship? Are they looking for something that's tax deductible? And then they can essentially move that around and try to fit it with the athlete or athletes that might match up best. Now, that's how it's worked at IU to some degree. And certainly you've got like the Hysterics Collective that's also in the mix. There's plenty of collectives in various places. It is very different. And a lot of it really comes down to, you know, what the total amount of money is that's coming in and what it's being used for. Penn State has one of the largest football specific collectives going right now. And they've got a couple of $1 million businesses or $1 million donors that are in the mix, but they got a lot of like construction companies or contractors who they want to be affiliated with Penn State. You know, athletic directors are saying, this is where you need to spend your money. You know, give it to collectives. Don't give it to the athletic department directly. And, you know, so they're out there signing like $100,000 deals that are going to last for 4 years. And then that money's going to go in one place or another. And then it's really a matter of divvying it up and figuring out where it's supposed to go. it's kind of opaque, and that's a good thing, I think, because it protects the privacy of both the people that are involved in giving the money, and it also protects the athletes. I think that's an important point we'll come back to as we go through this.
So where does Indiana stack up in the world of NIL as far as providing for athletes, both in making sure they get some revenues and then also in athletes who are looking to come to Indiana? And I probably it varies by sport, I would imagine.
It does. I mean, I think Indiana's really well positioned right now. So there is no NIL law in Indiana, which is actually a good thing because it gives the schools a free hand to decide what they want to do. A lot of states tried to jump in and pass early NIL laws, and it ended up backfiring. Now, many of them have had to go back to the state house and redo what they're doing. But Indiana has essentially kind of had no laws. I think IU, from a basketball perspective, both men's and women's, is in among the best shape of anybody in the country because you have an active, engaged, passionate fan base, and that goes all the way up, like from the people who have, you know, are only buying single game tickets to Assembly Hall, all the way up to people who have millions of dollars to spend on NIL opportunities. And I think IU went into this with their eyes wide open about what it was going to turn into and what they were going to need to do to make themselves nationally competitive. Now, I think it's a different story in football because you don't have the same level of passion with football. You don't have the same level of program momentum right now. It feels like football is kind of unfortunately going in the complete opposite direction that men's and women's basketball is going. And that has a real impact on people's desire to give money to an NIL collective, either as individuals or as businesses. But I think you see the opposite at other schools. So like Michigan clearly has a lot of money in the kitty for NIL, for football. But as I mentioned earlier on in the show, like Hunter Dickinson going on a podcast and saying he was earning less than six figures. I mean, he was one of the top, four players in the Big Ten last year, I think you could argue. I mean, a nationally known name. And for him to make that little when other people in the Big Ten at more or less his level were making significantly more, to me illustrates that there's really not the interest in Michigan basketball NIL as there is in, say, Indiana basketball NIL. Penn State's in a similar boat where they've got all the money in the world for football, not so much for basketball. So I think down the road, you're going to see athletic departments that don't have enough money to fully fund an entire athletic department NIL effort, which might take $20, $25 million a year to fully fund what you would need across all athletic departments, like needs. You're going to see athletic departments and collectives making decisions about where they think money should be best allocated. And that's going to be an interesting process to watch because I think, you know, some schools are just going to have to make decisions about where the money, where do they really want to compete? You know, you're not going to be able to be all things to all people all the time.
Well, Galen, I could sit here and probably ask another hour's worth of questions, but I'm going to tune into the podcast, go back and listen to all the previous ones, and I encourage all of our listeners to do that. But it's nice to hear that Indiana is positioned well in basketball. I know that we have multiple fans who love football, too, and we got to get with it. But that's part of the reason that an Mbako does come to Indiana and a Ware comes to Indiana is because we're obviously positioned in this new world of NIL. That's pleasing to me, even though if I don't fully understand it. But, yeah, go check out the NIL hotline from the Back Home Network for a lot of information about this ever-changing world of college athletics. So coming up here on Assembly Call Radio, it's mailbag time. We got a bunch of great questions, and we'll answer them next. So stick with us here on Assembly Call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match.
Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Interesting, too, is the money of what the athletic department needs for their expenses versus the NIL and where are donations going. Is that an issue, too, that
not as much for Indiana because, I mean, the thing I always have to remind people is, like, I use athletic budget in 2005, I think was about $50 million. It's about $125 million right now.
And it's going to go up.
And it's going to go up because of these deals that are coming up with the new, like, the expansion and the college football playoff. I mean, there's so much money. This is the thing. I mean, not to – you know, this is not to cast aspersions on anybody, but like what you've seen is like coaching salaries have gone through the roof in the last 15 years. Support staff salaries have gone through the roof. You had one compliance person 15 years ago. You've got five being employed by the athletic department now. You've got, think about the new facilities that IU has, you know, paid for over the course of the last 15 years, you know, whether it's the BART or Andy Moore Field or the renovated soccer stadium or the twice renovated football stadium or Cook Hall. There's plenty of money. And so, yes, the donations will hurt a little bit, but the donations were kind of there. They're almost like gravy and
cherry on top.
They're less important now because of all these other revenue sources. And the fact that if you don't spend your money on the players, the resources that you have otherwise aren't going to matter.
They should fuel each other.
Basically. Interesting times, but good. All right, let's hit this and, mailbag and
wow, I almost just had the largest sneeze in history and it went away. That was very disconcerting. Where'd it go?
Well, all right, here we go.
This is Nick Zeisloft. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back to The Assembly Call. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and Galen Clavio. It's now time for our mailbag, and most of these questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join. Go to assemblycall.com/community. And check us out there. It's a great community. First question is a good one from Phil. Academic issues aside, is Caleb Love worth the risk if he creates problems in the locker room, or do we believe that the right coach, like Woodson, could rein him in, or would accepting him, irrespective of his ability and assuming it's well-managed, diminish IU's academic reputation? I think we talked about it's not necessarily – low academics. It's just probably a matching of credits. So I think that maybe answers that already. But let's just talk about the issue of Caleb Love, Ryan. I think, you know, you guys mentioned it earlier. There's reasons to want him here, and there are reasons that it's maybe not a good fit. Where are you leaning, or aren't you leaning one way or the other right now with the word that Indiana is interested on social media with Caleb Love?
What I come back to repeatedly is I don't see how he and Xavier Johnson coexist on the court and be the best versions of themselves. I don't see that fit. Love is a guy who needs the ball in his hands and creates, and Xavier is a guy who needs the ball in his hand and creates. I mean, Xavier's not playing off the ball. His most effective thing is getting into the paint and finding guys. You know, he shot pretty well from three his first year at Indiana towards the end of the season, but he's not a knockdown shooter. And Love is an incredibly inefficient player. Now, how much of that is North Carolina and how they were and how much of that is, but I mean, this guy doesn't shoot, he barely shoots 40% from the field. And his three-point shooting, I mean, if he was shooting 38% from three, 40% from three, maybe you consider it. You try and work him off the ball, but he's not that type of player. And he's a guy who takes a lot of shots and has a lot of bad habits. So it's tough for me. I don't think he's a bad kid necessarily. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. And if he came to Indiana and was willing to humble himself and be, you know, second fiddle to X as far as ball, you know, ball, like time with the ball goes, maybe that works. But I just don't see, I can't picture it how it works out. I really can't. And I'd rather Indiana go try and find a guy who, a high percentage 3-point shooter to fill that role, fill that last spot.
Yeah, Gail, I'm gonna come to you in a second. The part about Woodson reigning in a minute. All of us coaches think we can change guys. You know, we believe in ourselves enough that we might, but there's always a line, right? And Woodson had a Zoom call. We don't know what was on that Zoom call, whether that was good information or not, but it seemed like Indiana kind of wasn't very active in pursuing him initially. So you wonder if that has changed some, or they're going to reinvestigate that some. But coaches sometimes will take a talent that has some deficiencies in some areas and try to mold them into ways. And Woodson's kind of done that with Xavier, who is a little wild at Pittsburgh and has come on and shown some growth too. So that there's the reason that you might want to bring in a heavily talented guy that is inefficient, that does need the ball, that's not a typical come off a screen or a catch and shoot three. He's more of a, you know, the scorer mentality. And I thought he struggled at North Carolina when Davis was given the reins at point guard. That made North Carolina better when they took Love off the ball. So, yeah, heavy concerns for me. You know, obviously, if Woodson takes him, I got to trust Woodson's knowing what he's doing, and then things will, you know, work out as they need to. But I would be a little bit on I think we got enough right now, and we just need a little bit of a piece of a shooter. I'm on the no side right now, but we'll trust the coaching staff. Galen, your thoughts on Caleb Love?
I'm blaming Hubert Davis for most of Caleb Love's issues. I mean, I feel like good he point. Was on a pretty good trajectory. And if you look at this last year, it's like something got completely derailed. And guess what got derailed? The North Carolina offense got derailed. Like it fell off a cliff from where it was the previous year. And
just a note, don't disagree with you on that. My question is, the habits developed, are they going to be able to break? So,
well, and it's a reasonable question. And I look at it like this. I think Caleb Love, a month ago or 5 weeks ago, I guess we decided was the date that he was originally looking, and then he ended up committing to North Carolina on April 7th. Caleb Love at that point, if he had been brought in, I think that's a dangerous time to bring in Caleb Love, because now that becomes an integral part of the roster as you start to fill the other slots, and you kind of had to build everything around that. That is not the position Indiana's in right now. You know, since then they've added Khalil Ware, they've added Walker, they've added Sparks, they've added Ngakpo. And what we've got now, is a situation where if they were to add Caleb Love, and I'm not advocating that they will, you're bringing him in as a luxury item. You're bringing him in as a guy who's a bit of a distressed asset, who was asked to do way too much and didn't handle things particularly well. Guy played 87.7% of available minutes for North Carolina last year. His assist rate dropped in 2 years from 23 to 16. Like that, these are things I think I have a hard time completely blaming the player for. And if you looked at North Carolina really over the last 2 years, you could see that they had some struggles with getting a plan in place to begin with. And that tends to weigh the heaviest on the point guard. So all of that said, I don't think Indiana needs Caleb Love. I think he'd be a nice additional piece. And if it worked out, great. And if it didn't work out, it's not that big of a deal. But I look at the roster right now and I say to myself, well, if your starting lineup is, you know, Xavier, Trey, McKenzie, Malik, and Kalel. Okay, that's a nice starting lineup. You know, you've got three guards that you can play interchangeably to some degree, you know, coming in off the bench at that two spot, because you've got Cups as a freshman. You've got Newton, who hopefully will be healthy enough to contribute. He's a 6'3", you know, combo guy. You've got CJ Gunn, who has to be better next year, one would imagine, than he was in limited action this year. And that's a really nice five-person rotation to have in the backcourt. You've had Trey Galloway play at point guard. You've had Xavier play off ball occasionally. So you've got a lot of options. You are taking it on faith to some degree that the young guys would develop. But essentially at this point, your two under that circumstance is your fifth offensive option in the starting lineup. And if you've got Trey Galloway coming in as your fifth offensive option, you're in really good shape. So that's where, you know, I do think that Love brings some things to the table that we don't have right now on this roster. And that might raise the ceiling. It might raise the floor. It might do neither of those things. I trust Mike Woodson and his staff to evaluate whether this would be a good addition or not. If they bring him in, I'm excited to see what happens. If not, and they don't bring anybody else in, I'm going to assume that they're looking at their roster and saying, we got to get our current guys minutes. And it's going to be hard to do that, bringing in a 13th player. Because where are you going to find room? Like at this point, look at the roster. Like, you know, right now with 12 players, you got Anthony Leal in the mix too. Like three of the guys on the roster right now aren't going to play hardly at all. Do you want to add a fourth and then figure out who else is not playing? That to me might be a bigger issue than, you know, whatever bringing Love to the table might add to the roster.
So where do you guys sit on that last spot? Obviously, you're going to entertain and investigate Love. We've just talked about that. Do you need to bring in someone of that quality? Do you bring up someone who is just going to compete with Galloway, may start, may come off the bench, or do you bank that scholarship? Where do you guys see the roster going with that last scholarship, Ryan?
The one thing this team doesn't have is a knockdown shooter. I mean, if you're looking for things they don't have. Now, CJ Gunn might be that guy, but it may take him another year. We don't know. We haven't seen the evidence that he can do that. We saw it in high school, but he shot, what, like 5% last year from three? I mean, I think he's got a good shot. I think he just rushes it at the college level. So I think the thing they're missing is a knockdown shooter, and I think you need to go find a knockdown shooter. They do not have one. And I don't count Trey Galloway as a knockdown shooter because – simply didn't make enough. I mean, he made more than 50%. And I think we would all say that his shot doesn't look great, but the ball goes in. You can't argue with the results. I don't think he made
seven fewer threes the whole season than Jalen Hood-Schifino did. I just want to get that out. So,
I mean, no, I think he did incredible work adjusting to his shot, but he's not a, you know, he's not the guy you're running off of screens to hit it to launch a three. He's not going to be your mini Steph Curry or Nick Zizeloft even. You know?
This is where I think the idea though is that, you know, McKenzie can come in and be that guy.
Yes.
Like now you're, because I think to some degree where we've all got ourselves programmed to the idea that your knockdown shooter has to be at the one or the two. You know, the idea. And I think that that's a real possibility and you've got some flexibility there. The one thing I'll say is this, I think historically having the full 13 scholarships filled made sense because you needed some developmental pieces on the bench because guys were going to leave. But as we talked about earlier on in the show, recruiting's different now. You don't really need to fill all 13 spots because there's no point in redshirting a guy who might not be there next year.
Yeah.
So, unless you think you're going to get so decimated with injuries that you need, you know, essentially eight pieces of depth to go along with your starting lineup of five, it may make more sense to avoid disrupting the chemistry that you've got right now and just roll with 12. I don't think that's not a sign of failure by any
means. Yeah, I think if the player presents himself that, you know, that you feel like is a value added guy, because there could be guys that leave still. I mean, you know, this window of the transfer portal is closed, but guys could just decide, hey, I'm not going to play this year, and I'm gonna sit out, and I'm gonna transfer at the end of the semester or something like that. So, you never know how that's gonna, you know, the modified Logan Duncan, as I call it. But you know, like, you never know what's gonna happen with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I do think I do think keeping it open is certainly an option, but I don't know. If the piece is there and not a guy who can shoot 40% from three is there, yeah. I think having more shooting is never a bad thing. So
correct. That Kurt asked, should IU look for a shooter? I think yes, but I think you can be very picky because I do think the roster is
you're
okay.
You're obviously
right
picky
now.
At this point.
You're picky, and that's where the Caleb Love comes in. Can he come in and be an okay fit? And I know the fit sometimes is overblown. You know, the New York Yankees won and didn't like each other and all that stuff, but you know, you can be a little picky now because you've gotten some really good pieces in this portal. But a shooter, I don't think you're going to decline a shooter just because you want to would rather keep a scholarship open. You're not going to turn down that young man who can flat out shoot. So I think that's the answer. And then Jared asked, adding Mbako, what is the best guess of where we could fall in the Big Ten? Are we a fringe top 25 team, or are we still one player away? I know rosters are not complete yet. My quick guess is 20 to 30 with the potential, as soon as they gel, as Galen said, if they gel, the sky is the limit. But they are new pieces that have to be put together. So I'm very hesitant to go a little bit higher than that. That would be my guess, somewhere in the 20 to 30 range, depending when all the rosters fall out in that 5 to 7 seed range. Galen, your thought about that's a way too early kind of prediction.
I feel like I'm a lot more bullish on this roster right now than many people are. I mean, a lot of people, both national media and IU fans still seem to think that this team's got a long way to go. And, you know, certainly there's a bunch of new pieces, but as I said earlier, I trust this coaching staff to put them together because they've managed to do that. It's a whole different type of roster than we're used to. I think the big question mark for this team about their ceiling is how well can they come together defensively. You know, that was the big, as much as people complained about Mike Woodson's offense this last year, the big problem with IU was that they were 45th in KenPom in defense. And that was really limiting in terms of, you know, they had to score all the time in order to make up for the fact that they were allowing more points than they should. This is a team that, physically speaking, is tailor-made to be an absolute bear to play against. I mean, you've got height, you've got length, you've got athleticism at, you know, right now I'd say four of the five starting positions. And yeah, you've got young players, but you've got young athletic players that I have to think Mike Woodson is pretty sure are going to respond well to coaching. So I look, at this point, I think Indiana once again could be a top three team in the conference. They've got the talent. I think this is a team that's probably going to struggle a little bit out of the gate as they try to find themselves and who is going to fill what roles. But I think this is the kind of team that could really hit stride in like early to mid-February and be far better going into the NCAA tournament and underseeded, kind of like UConn was this year to some degree. I'm not saying they're going to win a national title, but that kind of a team where it's like, no, they're not going to dominate all season. And that might be the best place to be because, Ryan, as you've noticed, the best teams throughout the course of the regular season are not necessarily the teams that are going in and doing that great in the NCAA tournament.
No, there's a team up the road from Bloomington that I think has struggled with that, but I can't remember who it was.
Was that like Marion University?
No,
UND? Up the road.
Up the road.
Technically,
it'll come to me. Okay, it'll come to me.
All right, just a couple quick recruiting questions, and then we'll sign off for the night. Michael said, with respect to recruiting momentum, what's more important, the drafting of Trace and Jalen Hood-Schifino, where or where they're expected or higher? Does that help recruiting or advancing further in the tournament next season, or both? We can just answer that real quick, Ryan.
It's both. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, I think that the drafting is more important for top end guys. But if you're looking at the program filler guys, the four stars and all that, they want success. They want winning, as well as, you know, they want to know that the coach can make them better and that they can win in advance. For the top level guys, it's the draft. I mean, absolutely. They want to win too, but they also want to know they're going to get developed and, you know, go from being five star talent to first round pick and be able to walk that path. So I do think it's both, though. I think, and teams can do both. You know, you can win and make it far in the NCAA tournament and also get guys drafted. And sometimes one leads to the other.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, I feel like to some degree, people think we have to take all of these sequential steps as a program. I'd like to note that UConn just won the national title. And in the previous 4 years, they had missed the tournament, lost in the first round, and lost in the first round. It's not necessarily a linear pathway. I do think that for, you know, what's most important right now is for fans, it's continuing to get better and have better regular seasons, because that will likely spill over into having better postseasons, and that'll make everybody happy. I think the average player right now, at the caliber that Indiana needs and that you need if you're going to compete at the highest levels in college basketball, yeah, they want winning, but they also want to know that they're going to a place where they're respected, where they're cared for, and where they're able to develop in a professionalized environment where they're treated like men. And that is what Mike Woodson is offering right now. And it feels like that message is resonating. And I think, you know, Trace Jackson Davis, Jalen Huccifino, you know, what they're able to do on draft night will help. But I think that just getting to the point without worrying about specific numbers of where they get drafted, I mean, obviously they don't get drafted at all, that's a different story, but it adds to the narrative. And I think that narrative continues to build. And you know, now you've got players that to some degree are good enough that they might succeed in future drafts, you know, whether or not they develop, you know, particularly well here, because they're already at a much higher level. And so I think ultimately fans need the wins more than the players that might be coming here do. Players that are coming here want to know that they're going to a place that would be actually enjoyable to play basketball and develop. And I think that's a really key point that sometimes we miss out on sometimes.
And to wrap it up, Kevin says, in April 2021, I told you that by now Woodson would only sign two local Indiana guys. How shocked or concerned would you be? And does the realities of Woodson's success nationally as a recruiter, as well as the team's rapid improvement, change your mind that Indiana needs to be recruiting in-state? You know, quickly, I'll throw my opinion. You need dudes, and I don't care where they're from. Bring them in so that they can play. Obviously, you want to get the best guys from Indiana if you can, but I don't believe that you have to just recruit Indiana only, and I think you just need to get the best player. So I have no problem with where Woodson's cast his net. I think he's come up short in some, but he's in the ballgame in a lot of these guys that are talented players. I would not pass on Jalen Huccifino because, you know, he came from Pittsburgh via Mount Verd. What a wonderful year it was to watch that young man. So, Kevin, I don't have any problem with Indiana players or not Indiana players being on the roster. Once they step foot on Bloomington, they're my Indiana players that I root for because they're wearing the uniform is how I feel. Guys, your thoughts on the inside-out type of recruiting thoughts that have been bantied around for years?
I couldn't care less. I mean, it's great to get Indiana guys. And when there's a great Indiana player in Indiana, Indiana should be in there for that recruitment. 100%, it's in your backyard. It's right up the road. You can go see him. Gabe Cupps is from Ohio. That's close enough. You know, it's the region more than it is.
Hey, was from Ohio. That worked out pretty well.
There's it's more the region, you know, recruiting your region well and locking it down than it is the borders of the state. I know people have an addiction to Indiana basketball in high school basketball and all that. I appreciate that. I get that. I covered Indiana high school basketball for years. I appreciate how sacred it is there. But Coach said it best. You want the best players. It doesn't matter where they're from. They become Hoosiers the minute they step on campus. And yeah, if there's a Romeo Langford, you want to be in it for him. You want to go get him. If there's a Cody Zeller, you want to go get him. Yogi Ferrell, all those guys. but those guys aren't around every year. You know, the top Indiana player might be ranked 70th, you know, and so you got to go get the best players that fit your program, regardless of where they're from.
Yeah, I mean, the need from the fan base for Indiana-born and bred players is never greater than when Indiana isn't winning things. Because the answer is always, well, we needed more Indiana kids because these kids clearly don't care. And that's rarely actually what's going on. Sometimes they're not good enough. Sometimes the coaching's not good enough. I think a lot of times it's been the more latter than the former necessarily. But IU fans and the program as a whole, I think, are starting to wake up a little bit to this idea that it really is about getting the right fits, getting the guys that can play not just within the confines of IU basketball as a program, but at the level that IU aspires to. And I think to some degree, a lot of people who look at IU and don't really understand that you have to have a certain level of ability and talent. It's not just drive and it's not just where you're from. They tend to think, well, gosh, it would be slightly better if you had somebody out there who we perceived as caring. And ultimately that's where Mike Woodson, I think maybe more than anybody else, you can trust what he's doing because he was one of those guys. Like he was from the state of Indiana and he was a top player. He's bringing in players he thinks are going to help win. And I'm hoping that perhaps he's better at communicating why these are good fits and being able to bring players in from all over the place more than Archie Miller or Tom Crean, who always seemed scared of being perceived as not taking Indiana players seriously. I don't think Mike Woodson cares. And even if he did, I don't know that anybody could reasonably argue that he didn't know what he was doing.
Yep, exactly.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Okay, well, that's going to do it then for us here on this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then,
take it from me, James Blackman Jr. Keep your elbows in, eyes on the rim, and get buckets. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
I never know when that's going to stop, those little tags at the end. I'm always like, do we jump in now? Is it? Thanks, Galen.
Galen, thank you. Good information.
Yeah, no, anytime.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good times
for everyone. You have now.
I have too many podcasts is the answer. Probably need to pare back a little bit. But, well, Cosmic America is on a hiatus, unfortunately, because Alex is about ready to get married. And some of the other ones I've kind of sunset a little bit because the NIL thing actually takes a lot of time, just trying to keep up with all that. Plus, I've got other, you know, like a job, so that doesn't help either.
Oh, you are still employed.
Somehow, I don't know how, but yeah, still gainfully so at this point.
We love it. We love to hear that. So, all right, I gotta go watch the end of this Lakers game.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, enjoy.
Gotta go combo that with hockey. So I hope you all have a good rest of the evening.
You too. All right, later, buddy.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good one.